Egypt, the Time of Pharaohs, the exhibition at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science transports you to the distant past to explore ancient Egyptian culture and the land of pharaohs. Over 5,000 years ago, Egypt became a state that unified many cities and towns along the Nile River. Since then, ancient Egypt's powerful pharaohs, phenomenal pyramids, and extraordinary art have captivated people's imagination all over the world. In the studio today, we are talking with Aaron Baxter, museum spokesperson for the Egypt exhibit and acting curator of anthropology at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. So Aaron, why is the burial process, Egypt included, such an important process in human civilization? What does it signify, and what did that process look like in Egypt during the time of pharaohs?
Ooh, that is a huge question. I love it, though. When we think about mummification, we think immediately to these perfectly preserved, usually pharaohs who are buried with their arms across their chest in gilt and gold and all kinds of things. And we need to back up the truck literally a couple thousand years, because mummification didn't start that way. It was a process. And before there were pharaohs, there were people in Egypt called the Bedarians and the Nakhadans, and they were burying their dead out in the western deserts in Libya. Well, not in Libya, but the Libyan desert, west of the Nile. And what they probably noticed was that when they put their loved ones out there, they were preserved because they were desiccated almost immediately. That means the liquids were moved from their body and they would just naturally preserve. And after a while, they enhanced this with linens that were steeped in oils and things like that. And so by the time Pharaoh came around or kings and statehood and things like that, it was already an important process to sort of preserve these bodies. And it just became more and more and more sophisticated. So by the time of the 18th dynasty with Tut, you were being wrapped in, it took 70 days to preserve the body. We know this from Herodotus, who wrote that you would take the blade of an Ethiopian obsidian blade and you would cut from the midline all the way to sort of the hip bone and remove the entrails, and they would go into their special jars that would be preserved by particular gods.
Kind of a funky question. We're all about music at Kuvo Jazz. Can you tell us what music specifically, if any, comes to mind when you're talking about the archaeology of death or Egypt? Anything that comes to mind musically for you? Or maybe you're just in a complete state of silence.
No, this is such a fascinating subfield of ancient archaeology, because music, as you know, is not something that preserves. But we know that, you know, dating back 50,000 years or more ago, we had drums and flutes and rattles and those sorts of instrumentation. There's analysis of caves in France from early hominids, our people, where they analyzed the footprints in the soil, and some very enterprising graduate student found out that those footprints showed dancing, that
Oh,
it
wow.
wasn't just walking, that they were going over their same footsteps.
Oh, cool.
And there are studies that look at the acoustics of places, so we don't often know what the tempo or the tunes or the tones were, but we know what the instruments likely would have sounded like, and we know maybe what the acoustics of a temple or a pyramid even or a tomb would have sounded like if that was part of the process of life and death in Egypt.
What other projects right now are you currently working on, both with the museum and without the museum?
Okay. Well, right at this very second, I've just come back from Chicago, the Society for American Archaeology Conference, and we've met with representatives of the Shuar people, and we're talking about repatriating or returning to them six sansas, which are T-S-A-N-T-E, don't spell things on the radio, shrunken heads that were collected by the museum or gifted to the museum back in the, 50 to 100 years ago. And so these are the heads of South American people who would have been worn as amulets on the chest as a sign of power and authority. And some are real and some are probably made for commercial purposes, but we're going to get those home. So in that same vein, I'm starting maybe a project in Egypt, I hope, with these things called Fayum portraits, which are the portraits of folks who were painted in the 1st and 2nd century AD and then affixed to their mummy. And then in the 1880s, a guy named Flinders Petrie often found the mummies in these mass burials, often cut them out off the mummies, and either sent them home to Britain or to the Louvre, and he gave a couple to the Cairo Museum, and those have been sent to the basement and have never been looked at. So there's about 46 of those Fayum portraits that we're going to go see and maybe write about for the first time in anticipation of new and exciting things happening in Egypt with the opening of the Grand Egyptian Museum this year, which is the anniversary of the discovery of Tut.
Aaron, thank you so much for being with us on The Morning Set. We appreciate it.
Thank you.